My husband is always telling me that in his next life, he wants to come back as one of my dogs. He has to race them to the bed at night if he doesn't want to spend the evening clinging to the edge and fighting for a pillow. My dogs go on vacation with us, have their own Christmas stockings, and I have even been known to give baby Lily a birthday party. Yes, I am ridiculous in my love of pets. But hey, my husband gets all those things too. And I know that many of you are animal lovers and equally guilty. But I would never, never, never call my spouse a dog. Nor would I want to be called a dog. Calling someone, almost always a woman, a dog, it's demeaning and crude. We know this. Our president has reminded us of just how offensive it is, as he has done it repeatedly, usually in response to criticism from women. Former aide Omarosa, comedian Rosie O'Donnell, actress Kristen Stewart, comedian Rosie O'Donnell, actress Kristen, commentator Arianna Huffington, the New York Times columnist Gail Collins, the list goes on. Criticism is hard to take, but it doesn't give us the right to call people names. None of us relish being critiqued. How often do you hear someone say, "I can't wait for my next performance review"? But to hear a man who holds a position of global power speak this way makes us shudder. Hearing a similar phrase spoken by Jesus, it kind of breaks our hearts. Jesus and the president demeaning women in the same way, using the same language. This is hard to swallow. How do we make sense of this? Well, how do you respond to criticism? It's hard for me. Sometimes I just shut down, at least temporarily. Last year, I was thrilled to be invited to write 3 articles for a new preaching commentary that is being published this fall. Now, some of the writers were given the task of exploring the exegetical aspects of the text. I was in the group that was asked to connect the dots between the text and our lives. I wrote my commentaries, sent them to my sister, you know, the seminary professor, and then submitted them. Now, my sister, who'd also been asked to write for a different year of the same series, heard back from her editor with requests for significant changes. Meanwhile, I didn't hear anything but crickets. "Oh, they must have loved yours," she said, but my stomach was in knots, and I wasn't brave enough to contact the editor. After months of silence, my commentaries were returned with red ink everywhere. Somehow, the editors had forgotten to return my articles for rewrites, but when they did, wow, I was so defeated and had very little time to respond at this point. I wanted to shoot back an email. "Clearly, I'm not good enough for your stupid commentary. You should ask my sister." But fortunately, my head spoke to my ego about the foolishness of that idea. After a day or so of living with the reality of the situation, I began to tackle them one by one. I submitted the first rewrite and held my breath. By sweat and tears and prayer, I got through it. And the process of revision, I know many of you have been through this, as painful as it was, challenged me and emboldened me. And the process also left me deeply thankful. I had editors who were committed to working alongside me so that my work would be the best that it could be. It wasn't a one shot and you're done. We keep it or we don't. They work with you to help you. They were open to the possibility that I could get there. And they invited me into that possibility. Good critique. Wise critique can crack us open in fresh ways. Healthy critique can lead us to deeper truths and greater freedom. When we admit that we don't have to know everything don't have to be everything. We open up space for God and God's generous and divine economy. So openness. What does it look like in today's two healing stories? Well, in the first story, it is Jesus who has to open himself. That's a bit surprising, isn't it? He's supposed to be the one with all the answers. He's supposed to do it right the first time, every time. Here is Jesus. He has left the region of Galilee and traveled northwest into a Gentile region. Jesus, weary and depleted, seeks out a bit of rest in Tyre on the beautiful Mediterranean Sea. Not a bad choice. Being in Gentile land, perhaps he thought he could escape the Jewish crowds who had begun to expect and anticipate his daily offerings of miraculous healings and compelling teachings. But God doesn't get vacations. And when you are God's son, well, even vacations become working ones. He can't put on his sunglasses and disappear into the crowd on the beach. But it is impressive how well people tracked his every movement back in the day without cell phones and GPS. Even here, far from the Sea of Galilee, a woman finds him and falls at his feet, begging him to heal her daughter. Which always makes me wonder, was this maybe the first instance of his feet being bathed with a woman's tears? It's certainly not the last. Now perhaps Jesus was seated at a table. Perhaps there was a simple meal spread out for him, wine and bread, fish and olives. The Jewish rabbi looks down at this woman kneeling on the ground, this woman whose posture reminds him of the dogs that beg around the table during the meal. And he says, "It isn't right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." Jesus, the Jewish rabbi, who came to proclaim good news to the Jewish people, says to this woman that his healing and teaching are for the children of Israel. But this woman, she does not shut down in the face of this demeaning comment. She does not surrender. She does not walk away. She stays. She engages him. And instead of making assumptions about Jesus, she believes in the possibility of openness in him. I love this brilliant woman. This woman participates by doing something that Jesus always did. She turns the whole dialogue upside down. He loved to do that. He always threw the questions back at the people who asked them. He loved baffling people and unsettling them. These two, this unnamed woman and Jesus, they are perfect sparring partners. So I imagine her looking around on the floor underneath that table as she kneels there. She sees where the bread is spilled off the table and there are crumbs on the floor, and she gathers them up. And then she rises to her feet, her head now above that man. That man, that teacher, that healer, that Jewish rabbi, and holding out those crumbs she has collected, she speaks, "Lord," as in a servant speaking to a master, "Lord," as she stands above him, "even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And to prove her point, maybe she even begins to eat those crumbs that have been mixed with the dust from the ground. And I wonder, did he laugh? You know, those eyes must have twinkled. Here was someone willing to challenge the Son of God. Here was someone who, hurt by the Son of God, did not throw in the towel and walk away. Instead, she invited Jesus to wrestle with her as God's angel wrestled with Jacob so long ago under the wilderness sky. In the morning, God's messenger left Jacob with a wound and a blessing. This woman would also be left with a wound and a blessing. A wound. And knowing that Jesus had first denied her what she wanted for her child. A blessing in the healing of her daughter. And it would appear she chooses to embrace the blessing and let go of the wound. Good answer, Jesus tells her. Good logos, Jesus says to her. Remember just a few weeks ago when we were in John's gospel, Jesus talked to the crowd about eating his flesh and drinking his blood, and they said, "This is a hard logos. It is too hard for us." The logos seated before this woman is the same difficult word of God, the same unsettling, thought-provoking word. He flips things back by saying, "You have given me a good logos." I sometimes wonder if Jesus wasn't trying to honor this woman by giving her the opportunity to engage with him in this wonderful, though brief, theological conversation. I love that Mark records this for us as a reminder that a woman can and should speak up in the presence of God. I love that this woman with no name recorded believes that Jesus can be more. She believes Jesus will be more than we presently know him to be if we allow him to be it. Openness. When Jesus' respite at the sea is over, he travels back down south to the Decapolis, which is also a Gentile region. The story Mark chooses to tell is of Jesus opening the ears and untangling the tongue of a man who is deaf and mute. He sticks his fingers in this man's ears in order to open them. He places his spit on the man's tongue to open his mouth. He opens him to a world of sound and speech and then says, "Hush, don't say anything about what I've done." It's like telling the man who is lame not to dance. I mean, are you kidding? The man couldn't speak and you want him to be quiet? But again, I wonder, is it possible that Jesus, by telling him not to say anything, that instead they might find ways to show how they had been changed? Was he hoping that they might live out their newfound freedom through a renewed sense of compassion, a restored desire to forgive, an openness to expanding at the kingdom? Was he hoping that their lives would be a testimony and not just their words? Words are powerful, and they hold the potential to give and take away life. They hold the power to wound and the power to bless, but our actions do too. And at the end of the day, our words will only wound. They will only wound if our actions don't match our words. It is not enough to say, "Be fed," as the author of James letters writes. It is not enough to say, "Be fed," unless we are willing to feed. It is not enough to say, "Be at peace," unless we are willing to help create that peace. So what will you do? Are you willing to stand before the church and dare it to be more open, more welcoming? Who are the ones we treat as dogs today? When someone puts you down, how will you respond? Will you run or will you stay? Is there the possibility of newness breaking forth? There are so many upside down angles to this story. Jesus, who was the stranger, is the one who's offered hospitality and then treats somebody with rudeness. How do we act when we are the guest? And how will we act when we are the host? And even when someone treats us with rudeness, how will we repay it? And could our kindness and love be the invitation to openness? What will we do? Where will you go and be the logos in this world? Amen.